Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada High School, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their past histories, present successes and challenges, as well as their future hopes and dreams. I hope you find some connections in their stories, learn a few things from and about them, and hopefully take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these uncertain times. This week's guest is Hannah Doran. Hannah teaches Seminar, a leadership course that teaches students who have historically struggled to engage, find success in school, and develop the tools to become self-directed leaders of their own learning. She discusses more about this course and how she supports students in our interview. She also talks about what strategies she uses to help students set goals and monitor their progress in reaching these goals. Hannah also discusses some helpful approaches to starting off our school year remotely in order to continue to prioritize building relationships with students virtually in response to some of the things she's learned in the spring. Thanks for tuning in to our conversation. In this episode, listen carefully for three different types of vehicles in the background. If you can accurately name all three, I will personally send you a fun prize. I'll probe more.
Oh.
Because we're on right now, Hannah.
Oh, hey. Man.
Hannah, Doran, welcome.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Beautiful day.
I'm glad to hear that you're doing well. Hannah, who are you?
Who am I?
Tell me about yourself.
All right. Wow. Kind of a open-ended way to start that one. Thanks, Jeremy.
All right. What led you into education?
I did not have plans on being a teacher. I feel like I talked to a lot of teachers who have always wanted to be teachers, who have always thought about being teachers and went to college to be a teacher and things like that. I went to college, I went to a boarding high school that specialized in math and science. And so I spent my junior and senior year living away from home, taking a lot of elevated math and science courses. And so when I decided to major in English in college, I think everyone was kind of like, okay, all right.
You just had enough of the math and science by
that
point?
Yeah, it's just always been, English is much more of a strength of mine and something I enjoy much more, but I just appreciated the type of learning that this boarding school, it's a public boarding school in North Carolina, instead of magnet schools in North Carolina, they do the North Carolina School of Science and Math. So I went there and then majored in English in college, and leaving college, I kind of thought that I would go into getting my master's in English and possibly my PhD or publishing, maybe law school. I'd got accepted in some different schools, and I was just kind of like, I don't know what I want to do and what's happening in my world. And so I did AmeriCorps for a couple of years after undergrad. And that kind of changed everything for me. AmeriCorps was really great. I first did the NCCC program, the National Civilian Community Corps, which is a program that you have a base, and my base was here in Denver. And then we would get moved out to different projects, and this was right after Hurricane Katrina, so I spent a lot of time doing Katrina relief work down in Louisiana, New Orleans area, the Ninth Ward, parishes a little further out that didn't get a lot of news media, but were pretty heavily impacted. And so it was mucking houses and churches and building permaculture gardens with Tulane University. Did that for a year, and then spent a year up in Alaska as a trail crew leader with AmeriCorps. So spent a year in the backcountry, living in a tent, showering a couple months or twice a month.
Yeah. Well, it's cold up there, so
it freezes. This is not the same. It's not the same. Building trails and things like that. And I guess just throughout everything, what I was doing and what I seemed to enjoy most was that I was teaching. I was teaching people how to build these permaculture gardens. I was teaching folks how to build trails, how to do it sustainably, how to live off the land, just all these different things. And I found that what I enjoyed most about that whole experience was the fact that I was teaching. One of the cool things, though, is that it really started me off with a really broad perspective of what it means to be a teacher. So people, when they ask me, like, oh, how long have you been a teacher? I'm like, in the classroom? You know, I always have the question because I've been a teacher for a long, long time, probably since I was little, just because, you know, I learned something and the first thing that pops into my head is, who can I tell this to? Like, this is a cool, cool thing. Who needs to know this? Like, and even now I think about, like, I learn a new recipe and I call my sister, or I learn a cool thing about viruses and I call my friend who works for EPA, you know, just different things that, EPA, she doesn't work for the EPA, that pop into my head, just like, how can I help transfer knowledge to other people?
So that's the part that you enjoy most. It's like kind of sharing knowledge, spreading your expertise in different areas, the things that you learn to other people. That's kind of the precipice of why you became a teacher, like a formal teacher.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I was kind of figuring out that I wanted to be in a classroom, I was like, ooh, a classroom. After being like out in the trails and the backcountry and stuff, it seemed kind of confining. And that's why I decided, I was like, okay, I'll go and I'll be an English teacher. And so I went to George Washington University, and got into a fellowship program there, and they said, oh, we filled our quota of English teachers this time. Would you consider being a special education teacher? And I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know. 'Cause my experience with that is like rural North Carolina, schools where everything is very segregated, students, with special needs are thought of as extremely different and treated as such. And so I was just kind of like, I don't know if that's really where my strengths are. And so I just kind of took a leap on that, and never looked back. It was the best decision I think I've made, because it did offer a lot of the freedom that I was worried about in a classroom. I feel like with students who learn differently, you have to reach out in different ways. And so that has just been kind of my goal the whole time, is that I just meet students where they are, and they are all over. So it's a matter of, like, you know, just trying to figure out what they need and how I can help them get that, and how to help them understand what they need so that they can ask for it appropriately.
So what brought you to Arvada then?
Yeah, so I was teaching up in Pooter School District in Fort Collins. Loved my position there. I was a special education teacher there for 7 years. And then my husband got a job in here in Denver, and so we were moving south. And so I started looking around for positions, and it being a new district and things like that, I just didn't know it. I was like, I don't know, maybe I want to try something a little different, than being a special education teacher. I started just looking at different schools. My father-in-law, actually, my husband's whole, family, they went to Arvada High School. And so when I was kind of looking and Arvada came up, and this re-engagement position came up, I kind of reached out to him. I was like, oh, you know, I applied for a position at Arvada High School. And so we were kind of talking about that. And so it was interesting that, you know, my family has roots back from the 70s and even before. And his whole family still lives in Arvada. And so it was just kind of an interesting connection there. And so I just felt like you know, I was coming back to a community and a family that I had heard about, but never had been a part of. And so I just felt comfortable making that decision for Arvada specifically. And then the re-engagement position was interesting because I didn't know what it was. I was like, what is this? This sounds interesting. What is happening here?
And I don't think you were the only one though.
Yeah, I know. I think people are still like, what do you do? So I think when at first,
that's my next question. So.
Yeah, when at first I was like, what is this position? You know, and they're like, well, it's a way to, you know, re-engage students who have disconnected from school or who haven't found a niche or a community here at school. And I was like, oh, well, that's so the things I've been wanting to do my entire teaching career and always find that I have things getting in the way of, you're going to make that into a whole position. That's awesome. And so, you know, definitely jumped on that. But yeah, the re-engagement, what I have found, re-engagement, the re-engagement program kind of within the district is kind of what morphed out of what used to be kind of truancy. It's students who haven't been attending, haven't been engaged in school, and for various reasons. There are some who haven't been attending at all, and then there are some students who attend but kind of aren't there. You know, it's those students who you're like, you have really great attendance, but you're failing everything. You know, and so it kind of hits a broad spectrum of students, and figuring out ways to support them. You know, the whys behind, why are you not connected? What's happening? And how can we build relationships in order to get you to reach your goals? And that looks different for different students. So that's been interesting to try and navigate, because first I had to figure out, well, what exactly is this? And what are my parameters? And what can I do? And again, I've been given a lot of freedom to, you know, like, here are students who need help. What can you do? I'm like, cool. All right. Let's figure out what they need. And that didn't change with remote learning.
Well, it sounds kind of like this really fits your skill set, because you mentioned earlier that you just like to meet people where they are. Like, you figure out, all right, what do you need? And this is where you are, and let's figure this out together.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is I never have, hardly, I come into things without the ideas of where I think it's going to go. You know, I'm pretty just open. I'm like, oh, okay, let's figure it out. It's not me being like, let's figure it out and I'm going to guide you in this direction kind of thing. It's like, I don't know either. Let's figure it out together kind of thing. And I think that's helped students just be like, Miss, you're, you know, I could just talk with you. And I'm like, because I don't have a plan, right, for you to, like, I want to put you in this box or something like that. It's like, you know, what is it that, what are your goals, and you know, what do we have here that will work for you? And if it's not, what is out there that'll work for you? It's trying to make sure that, you know, we're just doing what's best for students.
So why does that work for students better than the alternative, which may be like, okay, I'm going to have a really specific program, or you're going to like go through these steps. Why do you feel like talking with students and working things through with them is a better strategy than the alternative?
Yeah, I think sometimes there's a distrust with students, because they, I start talking with them and they start like rolling their eyes and they're like, yes, miss, you'll be there to help us and da da da, we know, and da-da. And it's just kind of lip service. And so, what I've really tried to do is show through actions, because I can talk to you all day long. And that's one of the things that, in my classes, my seminar classes, we talk about a lot, is that words are words. If they're not followed through by action, then nothing changes. A lot of times students in my class are like, oh, miss, I'm sorry. I'm like, I don't need an apology. I need a change in behavior. Otherwise, they're just words. And so, you know, it's something that I think, because that is my expectation for them, I also have to hold myself to that expectation. And so it's, you know, I am here and I am checking up on you and making sure that I'm following through, and holding them accountable, because I'm expecting them to hold themselves accountable. So that's been...
I want to get into that a little bit more in a second, but for right now, I want to back up just a little bit, just to make sure that everybody's like really clear about some of the definitions about some of the things that you just mentioned here. So like you teach a course called Seminar. Mm-hmm. It's part of the re-engagement grant that we received. And you have like, you also work kind of closely with several people on our staff and in the district as well. Can you talk a little bit more about that, those things, so that people are like really clear?
Yeah, totally. So Arvada received a grant from the Department of Education. Arvada and McLean did as well. Working on increasing student engagement at school. And what that looks like, and our goals are around increasing attendance, increasing grades, and then keeping students enrolled in school. And so I teach a seminar class this past year, and then I believe this year as well. I've got three sections. Last year it was two 10th grade sections and an 11th grade section. This year it'll be a 9th, 10th, and 11th grade section. And what we focus on are leadership skills, but it's a broader idea of what leadership skills are, because it's how to become a leader of yourself, a leader of your own learning. And if you choose to lead other people, great, but you need to at least have those skills for yourself.
Which is great, because that's also coincidentally our mission for our school.
Yeah. So, I mean, all of this has just kind of like fallen into place. It's not, it's just kind of happened. And, you know, kismet or whatever. So, yeah. And so we focus on everything from, you know, conflict resolution, to how do you motivate yourself when you just can't, you know, that's kind of how we start off the year. And then what are your goals and what are your aspirations and how are you going to reach them? And, we do a lot of, communication, practicing, around, yeah, if you yell at this person, whether it be a teacher or a parent or, a friend, like this is the reaction that you get. If you want a different reaction, you have to come at them in a different way. And so just kind of being, very intentional about, teaching skills that some students pick up automatically, and some don't. And some have learned, not necessarily the wrong way, but they have learned a way that is not getting them the results that they want. And so also looking at, you know, different ways that you can communicate or relate with people, that aren't necessarily the way that you've always done it. And so we have a lot of discussions.
In any way, is this easier said than done?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I go in every day with a plan in my head that I start talking, and it may have gone amazing in the two class periods before, and then I get to this last class period, and I'm like, oh, no, this is okay. All right. And that's a big part of being open to allowing students to take things where they need to. And one of the great things about the seminar class, we have a curriculum, and that is our base, but there's so much more that we do on top of that, that the students kind of drive, just because whereas the curriculum is like, this is a really important skill. The students are like, oh, I got this one, but I don't have this one, you know, and or it's things happen in class or things happen in the hallway. And that becomes the learning opportunity for the day, you know, because when class starts with two students in each other's faces and we have to like, you know, process that and what happened, what, you know, what's going on. And well, this happened, and this happened. Well, then, why is he the one you're yelling at when it was this person over, you know, and try to like figure out what was misplaced. And so it's really being open to having students, like, again, that not being lip service. Like, if you want students to be a leader of their own learning, when they come to you with a learning opportunity, to just delve into that, and to know that you may have a plan in place, but they're not going to be with you on this plan. I mean, there, I've had classes where I'm like dragging kids along because it was my plan to get through this thing, and I'm dragging them, and I'm like, oh. And I've had classes where they are the ones, you know, leading the charge, and I'm trying to keep up, you know. And so it's allowing them to identify their needs, and then you helping them answer the many questions that they have.
So say more about that. You know, like, what are the most successful strategies to get students to sort of identify your needs? I feel like you do a really great job of creating this environment where students are comfortable with you and they're comfortable with each other, and they're able to like share their struggles. They're able to like celebrate their successes. How do you get to that point? Like, what are some strategies that you use to like help set them up for success in those ways?
Yeah, I think a big thing for me anyway is that it has to start with me. It has to start with me being open and just, I mean, we talk about, oh, being vulnerable or whatever, but it is just me being real, you know, and them seeing that, no, I don't have the answers and I am confused about this and I'll get back to you on this. And I don't know, somebody look that up, or, you know, that I don't have it in me to put on a front for you. And so once they see that they also don't need to put on a front for me, it just becomes that we're talking. And I'm not going to say that every class is kumbaya. I mean, yeah, we had good relationships and things like that. And the students in my classes had good relationships with each other. But there were still days that it fell apart, and it was not, I was like, oh. Yesterday was such a good class. It was so good. And then today they're in each other's faces and this is happening and I gotta like get between people, you know, and things like that. And like, okay, hang on, calm down, let's step back, kind of thing. And so knowing that, you know, a big part of this is not taking it personally, that a lot of it is, this has nothing to do with you as a teacher, and that there's a whole nother world happening outside of your classroom that students are dealing with when they come into the classroom.
Tell me about like your progress monitoring. Like you said that you help students sort of set goals, monitor progress. I've witnessed this before in your courses or in your classes where I see your students like really be able to do a pretty good job of saying, I'm going to get this done and here's how I'm going to go about doing it.
Yeah, one of the things that we do in the seminar class is we have kind of a study hall day. This past year it was 10th and 11th grade, so they didn't have study hall the way that they did freshman year. And so I tried at least one day a week to have kind of a study hall day where students would do grade checks, and we would just kind of conference on how classes were going and things like that. The way that I did it, and I found it to be pretty successful, was I had either, it was a paper or a form that I posted on Echo that students would go through and fill out. And it was really, for most of them, a really quick thing. They could just go through, list their grades. I had them list the number, the numerical grade, so that we could compare between weeks. And then missing assignments for those classes. And then beneath it, identify what it is that they wanted to, when they were going to get those things done. And so what I did is while they were filling this out, and again, like maybe 10 minutes, especially after the first couple of times that they did it, and I could just pop around, hey, what's going on? Oh, miss. And, you know, after the first time or two that we met, they're telling me, miss, my grade in geometry fell to a D and I'm missing this and I'm going to do this then. And it's, they are coming up with their own plans. I'm just kind of being that sounding board, or miss, I don't even know where to begin, you know? And then that's the kind of like, okay, let's spend a couple of minutes here. Which class do we want to focus on first? What do we want to, and that's a big thing, is that I think sometimes students feel overwhelmed and they don't know where to start. Or they do a little bit of a lot of things and they don't complete anything. So they feel like they've worked so hard and they're not seeing any changes in any grades because they haven't been able to complete something and turn it in. It's like I worked half an hour on this and half an hour on this and half an hour on this and half an hour on this. So they had done 2 hours of work, but they're not going to see any sort of grade change because they didn't stay with one thing in order to complete it. And so we talked a lot about that and just kind of how can you work on one thing at a time, even when your mind is all over the place and you're thinking, oh, but I got to bring up my French grade and I got to bring up my science grade and I got to bring up this grade. How trying to like center yourself and complete one thing at a time is going to be what helps your grade if that's what you're focusing on the most. But those check-ins can be really quick. I mean, I would probably get through a class of 20 probably within half an hour. So it's like as they're working on their things, I just kind of pop around and check in with students. And sometimes it was even less than that.
I did notice that you do a really brilliant job when you do conference with students, when you do check in with them, of being really intentional about, it's really clear that you know who they are, like what they've been working on, but do you have any go-to strategies and things that you think are really important to remember to do when you are doing your one-on-one conferencing with students?
Yeah, I think one of the things, and why I have them write down their numerical grades, is that sometimes students get frustrated because they just see that my grade is still a C. And so I was like, yeah, but last week it was a 71 and this week it's a 78. And so that was something big to just kind of see that difference, that yes, it's still that same letter grade, but there's a big difference in 7 points, especially later on in the semester when there aren't things that are changing drastically. And it was also important to hear from them because we were looking at all the classes. This would be different in a class that if you were just focusing on that one class, but hearing from them what they thought was most important to focus on. Because if I tried to impress upon them, I know you want to work on history, but your math grade right now is not looking so hot, we weren't going to get very far. And so it's like, okay, we want to focus on history. Cool. Let's focus on that. And so figuring that out. And once they could get past that sticking point, then we could go move to geometry. And they were much more open to working on something that maybe they weren't as excited about, because they've been able to see, what progress they've made in another class. So kind of letting students drive what it is they're working on and just really being there to support them and help them organize.
But I also heard that it wasn't just like, what do you want to work on? What do you want to focus on first? You're also sort of like pressing some other like, you know, issues of like, okay, but also we have to remember this, and like you're going to have this amount of time to do this, but we do eventually need to come back to focus and work on this area as well.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely kind of a perspective thing. And it's like, well, do you want to work on this because it's closest to passing? Do you want to work on this because it's further away and you just want to start, you know, and just kind of talking through pros and cons with them about, well, if we work on this first, then this is the case. And if we work on this first, this is the case. And letting them kind of work through that. I like to model, like, this is the thought process you can go through, so that this is hopefully a thought process that they can have when I'm not there. Because that's the thing, I don't want to be a crutch, and I don't think any teacher wants to be a crutch. And it can't be a thing where, oh, I'm teaching them and when I'm not there, they're not learning. No. I think the biggest thing we can do as teachers is teach students how to teach themselves.
It kind of reminds me too, probably part of this, I just finished that book Switch by Chip and Dan Heath. And part of that, like what they're talking about in there, is when you've got like a bunch of different things that you want to try to get done, like let's say it's a credit card debt and you've got like 5 different credit cards, and you owe money on all of them. What they say to do is like do the ones that are most achievable first, as opposed to like maybe the ones that financially might make the most sense, of like that might have the highest interest rate or might be the largest one. But when you can knock off the easiest one or the simplest one first, that makes the next one a little bit more achievable, because you can start checking your Or checking off your boxes, like, yep, done. I'm gonna cross this off my list.
Debt snowball. Yeah, totally. And that for a lot of students is great. I have had students though that can't get past the fact that they have a 37 in geometry. Or yeah, and some students just can't get past that. And so it's also recognizing that, okay, we're not gonna be able to move on unless this student is able to bring up this grade. And so, you know, offering options and then letting students, again, kind of, all right, I want to do it this way. Cool. Then let's do it this way. And so,
Hannah, we went remote in March. Do you remember this?
I do. I do remember this.
What changed? Like, what did you notice happened at that current time? Did you notice some challenges that weren't present before when it came to engagement with students?
Yeah. I think there were a lot of students who, I mean, there was a lot going on. Yes, it's like school went remote, but we were also in the middle of a pandemic. And so, and still are. And so, you know, there's just a lot of things going through students' mind. And for a lot of students and a lot of families, because that's a lot of what I did, was contacting families and trying to get, make sure students and families had access to internet and had access to Echo and things like that, is that school wasn't necessarily at that point in time a priority. There were a lot of shifts within families, whether it be family members getting laid off, younger family members being at home, and our students being responsible for those younger family members. Just a lot of shifts in priorities that I think families and students were trying to deal with. And so it was interesting when I would call families and talk with them, just kind of the different places everyone was at. And that definitely was reflected in how engaged students were with school.
What did you learn most about during this time?
Well, while we were calling, and I'm going to say we, because there were a bunch of us who were kind of part of kind of connecting with families and students, in addition to core teachers and things like that. Taylor and Gianna and Vern were all, you know, we were all kind of calling and seeing what was going on and kind of all talking together, like, hey, what did you hear about this? What do you know about this? And then a lot of teachers were calling too, just to kind of check in, and they would be like, oh, did you hear this? And so it was really great because we had a lot of pieces to the puzzle that we were all able to kind of put together to figure out what was going on with families. We had a lot of students who got jobs because family members were laid off and things like that. A number of students I was talking to were working at Walmart and McDonald's and things like that. They had gotten shifts, and then a number of students increased their shifts, right? Like if they were only working 15 hours a week, now they were working 40 hours a week. Because their family responsibilities changed. I think one of the big things when we were calling, when I started calling and just kind of communicating with families, my intention was to make sure they had access to the internet. So, hi, I'm Hannah Doran, I'm calling from Arvada High School. Immediately talk about internet stuff. And I got the information that I wanted. As far as like, do you have internet? Do you not? Great. What do you need? Da da da. Taylor, I think, brought this up. He's like, make sure you're asking families how they're doing before you get into all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, I have not really been doing that, because I just kind of was like, I know that they probably don't really want to talk. I was making assumptions about them wanting to talk with me. And man, when I started asking families, just, hey, how you doing? How you hanging in? Wow. It was like a tidal wave of information. Sometimes a lot more than maybe I was bargaining for. But families wanted to talk. They wanted to process with someone. I think the school for them is a safer place for a lot of them. students and families. And so when I'm calling from the school, just, oh, and then this, and this is happening, and do you know about this, and what about, you know, and just so many questions. And and it was just eye-opening to hear, you know, how many people had family members that were sick or were quarantined, or this happened or that happened, or they haven't been working, or you know, we have internet, I don't know how to help him get on Echo, I don't understand the technology, I can barely turn on a computer, or how do I help him when I'm working with, you know, the three younger ones, and he's helping with them too, and trying to figure out the balancing act. And so I think people have had a lot more time to process and to deal with some of this. And so I think that this fall, starting with remote learning, I feel like this is going to be a different beast. I think people are in different places than they were several months ago.
Say more about that. Like, coming into the next school year, you're thinking that things are going to be a little bit different than they were in the spring. How so? And what do you think that means for us? What do you think that we should be doing and focusing on as we go into the start of a school year?
Yeah, I think maybe the first thing that we have to do is figure out how to have closure from last year and to begin this year, and to know that the experiences and to acknowledge that students had very different experiences with remote learning last spring. Some students loved it. I had some students who were like, I don't have to deal with drama in the hallway. I can just focus on school. I'm done in 3 hours and I'm done with my school day, and it's great. I had other students who, many more other students who were frustrated because school for them is about that connection, and they weren't getting that connection in the same way. And so, you know, acknowledging that how we start this year might be different than how we did things in the spring, and that the expectations that were set in the spring may also be different than what they are now. And I think teachers have had time to think through things and to figure out what worked and what didn't work. I think students, you know, if we asked them, are pretty vocal about what worked and what didn't work. And so, I mean, that could be a great way to start the school year. Hey, last year, this, for some of you, it worked, and some of you, it didn't. What were some things that, you know, worked well, what didn't? And how can we make sure, for however long we're doing remote learning, that we are moving forward and progressing? I think students have great insight. And so I think we need to make sure we're not making assumptions. Oh, this didn't work because of this reason. It's like, did we ask? Or are we making an assumption on that?
What can we do to help? Like, what can the staff do? What can we do to make these connections in this, the start of the school year, better and as engaging as we possibly can, knowing that it's going to be remote, at least for the beginning part?
Totally. I think a big thing is just making those connections, and figuring out ways to do that. And that may be utilizing the breakout function more often so that you're doing it in smaller groups. Maybe that is ways for students to speak out, especially the first few weeks. I know we, as teachers, normally take some time to the beginning of the year to kind of get to know our students and things like that. We're probably going to need to take more time this year. Figure out how we can get to know students, because without building those relationships, then when things get hard in the content, students aren't going to have that relationship and that trust there, to have you help them or allow you to help them pull through it. And so making sure that, you know, I know all of us are very excited about getting back to content and trying to get back to some normalcy. And while there is, we want to get there, we've got to be really intentional about building relationships and making sure that we have these connections with kids. And so, I mean, that might be assignments at the beginning that kind of allow them to express who they are. And it might be that you, I mean, as teachers, we do kind of some, you know, a 5-minute one-on-one with students through the first month of school. I know one thing I did in a 12th grade English class one time. It was just something that popped out of my head. It was a cool thing where students chose a song that personified them. And so throughout the first month of school, the last 5-10 minutes of the class, I had 2 or 3 different students go and they would play their song and talk about why it is that this song personified them. And so they were, you know, and I started it off, and I was co-teaching at the time with another teacher, and we went first, and we were really vulnerable about, like, I chose this song because of this reason. My co-teacher chose this song because he was raised by his grandmother, and this happened, and I chose this song because I was, you know, from the South, and this has had an impact on me in these ways, and a negative impact on these ways, and just kind of being real, and then allowing students to choose how deep they take it. But us modeling that vulnerability at the beginning kind of made it pretty deep in a class. But I mean, things like that that don't have to take a ton of time and can be over the course of several weeks. It doesn't have to be, oh, we're going to get to know each other for the first 2 days and then that's it. You know, I mean, it's an ongoing thing, that should continue throughout the whole time that you have them.
I agree. I think to get to the depth of where we need to get with the students, I think having that vulnerability as quickly as possible to let them know, like, that I'm an open book as well, and I'm interested in you knowing who I am, so that they're going to be more open for them to open up to you about getting to know who they are. As people, I think that's something that I think we can and should do, and it's going to be a lot harder starting off in the remote setting.
Yeah, totally. And I realize, like, for some of us, that's not a strength, right? For some teachers, that's not a strength to kind of be vulnerable and tell more about themselves. And for some students, that's not. I mean, I had some students who would tell me everything, overshare, and then other students who I'm like, What do you like to do outside of school? Nothing. Okay. All right. You know, and it's the other end of the spectrum. And so, you know, knowing that, you know, we can push ourselves a little bit, but then also, you know, students will do what they're comfortable with as well.
And not every teacher or staff member is going to connect with every student, right? It's like you never really know what that maybe one thing could be that you share about, or like it's something about your personality. But I think it's still really important that every student has at least one adult in the building that they know and can trust and, you know, has their back, and the students know that they have their back.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about, I know we had to make a shift between the capstone and advisement this year, and how now that's the same class, and I guess that's one of the things I'm excited about with that class is that we get more time with a certain group of students. And so, you know, regardless of whether or not a student likes that teacher or a teacher, you know, that kind of thing, it's still like more time to get to know and the class and to build a culture in that class of support, and be just kind of an adult in the building, that those students can go to. And I think that's something when we talk about re-engagement and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of students who don't have necessarily an adult they're connected with at school. And so I think we are offering a really great opportunity. You know, and not to say that's the only opportunity, because there are a lot of teachers who students connect with for various reasons. And so I think it just strengthens. It's another tie that students can have. So I'm excited to see what that looks like, even though that wasn't our original plan. I think having kind of almost like a caseload of students that you're just kind of checking in with is going to be really powerful during this, especially during this remote time and the hybrid time, where students could potentially feel like they don't have the connection and support that in-person learning provides.
So. I agree with that hugely. Mm-hmm. I've been in classes or schools before where, you know, we met with our advisement like 4 days a week out of five, and we had that same group of people every day. I think seeing them a little bit more frequently and a smaller group of them instead of different students for both of those courses, I think could be hugely in our benefit as we try to engage students at the beginning of the school year as much as we can.
Yeah.
Hannah, tell me, what would you consider your biggest success so far at Arvada?
Ooh. See, Kyle, you asked about failure. So I was like gearing up for failure right now.
Oh, don't worry.
Oh, good. That's next. All right, cool. This is it biggest success?
While you think,
okay.
I'm going to just name a couple things here that what I really appreciate about you, Hannah. Like, first of all, you're awesome. You are one of the most reliable people for me, because you are always willing to step up and take on something, and you're like, yeah, I can help out with that. You're always willing to lend a helping hand to so many people besides me. And I see this like across the school. It's just like, you know, you're out in the hallways, you are helping get students into class, you are volunteering for like the 12 or 13 committees that you sit on. So like, I am just like in awe of how open you are to be able to just jump in, no questions asked. So that's one thing I really appreciate about you, but maybe you've had a second now to kind of think about, yeah, this has been a success for me.
Thanks. No, I think just the seminar class, since this wasn't something that was created prior to me getting here, it's been kind of exciting because it's like, oh, you get to create this whole new thing, but also kind of like, oh, I get to create a whole new thing. You know, and so it's also kind of frustrating because things that I think will work sometimes don't. And things that I think will, like, oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. And then I'm like, oh, that was not great. That was not as great. But then, you know, I've had a ton of students who were in the seminar class, I think, make references back to things that we have talked about in seminar class. And I think those are the times when I've been like, woo, woo, like in my head as they're sitting there telling me this, I'm like, yeah, yeah, like, Miss, it's like when you did this and we talked about this, and it's just, and they are the ones making the connections. I think that's when I'm thinking of a couple of specific situations where I was like, man, yes, you got it. And you made those connections. So that has been, I think, a huge success. Our numbers this year, when I filled out our grant information to send back into the, CDE, I was pushed by the district because at first I was like, oh, we don't have numbers because of COVID and all this kind of stuff. And some folks in the district came back and said, we were in school, you know, 3/4 of the year. We do have some numbers. Let's try in. And I was just like, oh, no. They're going to be horrible because of, you know, what happened with COVID. And I know that like a lot, and I hadn't looked at them after COVID and at the end of the school year. And, you know, after the first semester, we had a 70% increase in attendance for the students in the seminar class. And even with COVID, I think it was a 36% increase in second semester with attendance. And I know attendance was kind of all over the place, so that was interesting. And grades also improved. I can't remember the percentage right now, but as far as, you know, when I was kind of looking at data, I was impressed with, you know, what students were able to accomplish. I think sometimes we get things stuck in our head, and especially with COVID, when I was calling families and trying to talk with students and getting them engaged and things like that. I think in my head it was like, everyone is struggling kind of thing. And I was just like, I don't know how well we did. But looking back at some of the data, it's like,
there are some wins.
Yeah, there are definitely some positives, despite all the changes and kind of things we had to do there at the end.
So, great. Yeah. Congratulations. it's really, truly great that we saw improvements, and this program, the seminar course, I think does have an impact. I'm really glad that we got the grant money, and I'm extremely glad that we got you.
Well, also through the grant money, so Taylor works with me too, because he works part-time with restorative practices and then part-time with the re-engagement. And I mean, those two things go hand in hand anyway. So him and I work really closely, and he's in class a lot too. And so that's been super great, because we've been able to kind of use this as kind of a model classroom for what restorative practices should look like. Granted, some days you walk in, you're like, oh, is this restorative practices? Cause, and then some days I'm like, whoa, this is restorative practices. And I'm excited about it.
Taylor is so fantastic.
Yeah, no, he's definitely been a powerhouse in that classroom.
You guys both are a great team together. Mm-hmm. Hannah, what has been your best failure? It doesn't have to be at Arvada, but, you know, what best is the failure. Thing that most made you grow that you thought at the time was bad, but it turned out to be a good thing for you?
Yeah, I think one of the things I was thinking about is that people sometimes... the word failure for them is like, I don't know. I'm like, I fail all the time. I fail every day, multiple times. And so I guess when people talk about, oh, you didn't do well with that, you failed at that, I'm like, oh, okay. You know, it's kind of like not a word for me anymore. It's like, okay, how do we make it better? Like, it's my next thing. Like, what do I need to do? Sort of thing. So it's like, that didn't work. What else can I do? So I guess the connotation for failure isn't necessarily negative for me. I think one of the biggest, I think getting into, you know, special education was one of those things that I was like, oh, I didn't get into teaching English in the way that I thought I was going to. And I took a risk because a professor made the recommendations like, yeah, you should do this. I think you would be really great at it. And not knowing this professor very well, I was like, all right, I'm gonna try this out. And I think, you know, being a special education teacher has been an amazing experience, and one that I wouldn't, just in my ignorance, wouldn't have known about the possibilities. And I think that's something that sometimes fear of the unknown keeps us from making decisions. And so I think that was kind of like, it was at first kind of like, oh, I didn't get into what I wanted to get into, but I got into exactly where I needed to be. So
it's fantastic and good for us. Advice, last advice for any of the listeners right now, things that you would say, this is something I've learned over my years. This is something that I would suggest to a former Hannah, maybe a burgeoning traditional teaching Hannah. Make sure that you blank.
So I've been teaching, this will be year 11 in the classroom. And so that's interesting because I feel like people are like, oh, what is your words of wisdom? I'm like, oh, am I supposed to have those? What is, and
I... You've already given quite a few, but to summarize, or wrap up one final.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my biggest thing is it's okay not to know. You know, it's I feel like sometimes we as teachers feel inadequate when we don't feel like we know the answer. And it's okay not to. And so that's been the biggest thing is that... yeah, that you can have a plan and make sure you're flexible enough to do what needs to happen for the students that you're working with and supporting, and it's okay not to have an answer.
Hannah, thank you so much for your time here today. You are truly fantastic. I can't appreciate you enough. You have done so much for our school. We are incredibly fortunate to have you. And I just wanted to one more time thank you for being a guest on our show.
Cool. Thanks. Sorry, I was all over the place.
Oh. All right, bye.
Bye. Oh, that was funny. Just like da 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 da.
Did you spot all three vehicles in the background of this episode? If you did, don't forget to email me for your fun prize. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode. Hannah is a one-of-a-kind educator, and I hope you get to know more about her this year. You may have noticed that we actually have a title for this podcast, thanks to Kayla Castorena, who helped me workshop Who's Behind the Bulldog. Kayla, I appreciate you and think that this is a perfect title. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog?